This is Will's Band of the Week for February 14th, 2021. And welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will from Fourth Bedroom Studios, along with Chris from Ron Swanson Studios.
Yay, here he is. It's me.
We were just talking about how your sound is good. It's probably that, about a $75,000 upgrade we did for your studio recently?
Yeah, and I deducted it all from my income taxes. I lost $75,000 last year.
Seems it makes sense. Yeah, it's got, seems justified.
Right. Thanks, taxpayers. Yeah.
When did we have you on last? Was it the end of year? Have you been on?
I think the end of the year was the last one I was on. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. It's been all the begging that I've been doing through our representatives to try to get you on the last few weeks. Finally, it paid off.
Yeah, your people getting in touch with my people. I'm sure they've been having lunches and drinks and things, and they've been like really massaging my people to get me on and. So
when
I finally did it.
When I thought the deal was just about ready to close, I told my people to drop off a bottle of 21-year-old Balvenie on your doorstep, and I thought maybe that would do it. I think that's what did it, right?
This is a callback to a pre-production conversation that we had where a bottle just showed up at my house, a $250 bottle of scotch. I'm not sure where from, but...
So there are two questions. One, have you opened it? Number two, if you haven't, what's the plan?
You know, it's got to be for a super, you know, exciting big event. Right?
I'm thinking
so I got to think of a big event. Maybe if the Packers win the Super Bowl or something. Something like that.
What about top 10 albums of 2021 recording? I'm thinking that'd be perfect.
Because I would have to bring it over to your house,
right,
and share it. No chance.
You'd pour yourself a nice big glass, and you'd pour Baird and me like the tiniest pour. We'd barely be visible.
Yeah, it's 750 milliliters, so I'd pour myself a nice 700, and I'd let you guys sniff it.
Oh, man. That's pretty great, though. All right.
Yeah. I'm on concussion protocol tonight, so just so you guys know, my dog smoked me in the head. When I was trying to hug him, he like swung his head around and smacked me in the head. So I was like almost out cold this afternoon.
What kind of a dog does that? I mean, come on, a show of affection, and that's what he gives you in response?
Yeah, that's the story of my life.
Uncalled for. maybe he's a little stir crazy because of COVID. I know you've been distancing him, right, from other dogs.
Yes, very much so. He wears a mask when we go out, of course.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff. You know, we haven't had him tested yet, but I've heard dogs do get it though. Sometimes, like on a rare occasion, though, right?
I haven't heard about it with dogs, but other
tigers
animals
get it.
Yeah, I think a tiger had it, and they say that. I had a somewhat alarmist friend telling me that he says, "Oh, did you hear about the new virus in some obscure country that? But that's like worse than Ebola." And they found it in apes, and if they can have it in apes, then it can translate to humans or transfer whatever. So we're all just doomed.
Yeah, that's like the worst case scenario, though, right? For animals to be able to get it, and then so like all the squirrels in your yard have it.
The raccoons that are breaking into my trash, they've got COVID or something worse.
Yeah, it becomes all animals versus all people, which would be a great movie.
That would. Yeah.
Who wins? All animals versus all people?
I think we'd be gone.
Yeah.
Because if all
like
other
mosquito
living
bites and stuff, you're done.
Yeah. There was that classic movie, right? The Birds. It's an Alfred Hitchcock movie, right?
I feel like I'd do okay against birds.
Not if there are that many of them. I mean,
it's pretty easy to keep birds out of your house, like unless they're in disguise and they're bringing you like an Amazon package or something.
If they
here's your new mouse pad.
Once they find a way in through the chimney or something, then you're in trouble. You know,
if it's a pigeon wearing like a really convincing hat,
but once
he's driving
one
the Amazon bus.
Once one breaches it, you're in trouble. It's like those guys going after Mitt Romney. Didn't he make a great sprint? There was like a little footage, and he was like, that guy's in pretty good shape.
I was impressed. Like,
yeah,
Officer Eugene Goodman, American hero, who saved the Senate and possibly the U.S. government,
yeah,
ran by him, and he's pointing. He's like, turn around, go the other way. And Mitt looks like Allen Iverson. Like, yeah. He just like turns around and starts taking off.
Yeah,
like he's got skills. Packers should think about Mitt at middle linebacker next year.
See, he seems to be in pretty good shape. I think you can tell when people take good care of themselves. You know,
yeah, he's what, 74 years old, something like that.
See, that old? God,
yeah.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah,
I don't want to look that good when I'm 74. I'd like to look that good now.
Yeah,
like this very moment at age 47.
Well, you did say you just got off the treadmill. I'm very impressed at that.
Yeah, you know, lockdown, man. You got to do something.
Got to do something. Yep. Are you on that vaccine list yet?
I'm not on any vaccine list. I'm probably going to be like the last person to ever get the vaccine, which it would suck to be the last person to get the virus before everybody.
When they do like, the list, they go, you know, 1A, 1B, 1C, 2A, 2B, 2C. You're at like L2. And, yeah. You know, it's like the 25 groups from now. It's like the last group is people who work from home in their basements, writers who work from home in Ron Swanson studios.
Exactly. Your I mean, last. I can work from here, so it's not that big of a deal. But
yeah,
like at some point, somebody is going to be the last person to get COVID before it's eradicated. Right. And so imagine locking yourself in your house for a year and a half. And then, like, the last day before you're scheduled to go get the vaccine, it's like, oh, man.
Right.
Got it. Like, yeah. Walk by somebody.
Yeah. That'd be a bummer.
Yeah.
Oh, well. We can only hope. All right.
It'd be like the Mr. Irrelevant, like in the NFL draft, the last person drafted.
Right.
You'd be the last person, the last COVID.
It's a similar concept. Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know what's weird? It seems like in the fall, people were just not being very careful because, you know, I went down to our local bar, the Laurel, to pick up some takeout food. You know how they have the Friday fish fry thing and it's really popular?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was sometime in October, roughly that time frame, I went to pick up some food for the family and it was terrible. Like the bar was 3/4 full of people talking loudly with no masks. And I think they get around the regulation by, you know, their whole space includes the seating area and the bar. So if, like, they can have half capacity, they had nobody in the seating area and everybody in the bar. And I'm sitting on there, like, waiting for my order, and it's delayed. And I'm just, like, surrounded by these people, and it was just terrible. It was like, I thought, this is the most dangerous situation I've been in for the whole pandemic. And then... Then I decided I'm not going there ever again on a weekend during COVID because they're not careful or any, you know, it's just terrible. So I go last night to pick up some food. There's literally 3 people in the whole place, and I didn't feel like I was going to get killed. So I don't know what it is, but I mean, maybe it's just so cold people don't want to leave their houses right now.
I actually went and took a test a week ago. Because I was having headaches and kind of all the symptoms. Mm-hmm. At first, I didn't think they were the symptoms, but then my wife was like, "Those are the symptoms." So,
mm-hmm.
Went and took a test. But I had literally not set foot outside my house for the previous 7 days. And you know, the last day I was out, I was at Woodman's at the grocery store for like 15 minutes just to go get more liquor. And what did I get? I got some flank steak, I think.
Liquor and flank steak is how you survive COVID. So I'm assuming you tested negative.
I did test negative, which it's kind of weird when you test negative because, like, good, I'm not sick. But on the other hand, I'm also not immune.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be nice to get through it and be immune. The people that have gotten it probably wouldn't say that because it really packs a wallop, from what I understand. So.
Yeah, unless you got lucky and got a, I do know one person who got it and got a super mild case. So he was just lucky.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, and some people don't even know that they get it, right?
Yeah. Especially younger people.
But this is my question. The people that are getting it, if some people don't know that they got it, are we already vaccinating people who have gotten it and didn't know it? And so we're wasting vaccine on those people.
That's apparently not wasting, because they tell you to get it even if you had it, because the vaccine is better protection than actually having COVID, believe it or not. That's how good the vaccine is. Yeah. Yep. Everybody out there, get the vaccine.
Yes, please.
And if you feel sick afterwards, that's good. That means that it's working. So,
same as alcohol.
Right. So, we should probably, especially with you being on the podcast, we should probably talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominations, right?
Yeah, this is my annual complaint session about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And we won't go through the usual discussion that we have, like, well, this isn't rock and roll. Should it be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Because I feel like we've covered that plenty of times.
Yeah.
So I put together my list of the nominees and then who I think should get in.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just run through the nominees here.
Yep.
Mary J. Blige, Kate Bush, Devo, Foo Fighters, The Go-Go's, Iron Maiden, Jay-Z, Chaka Khan, Carole King, Fela Kuti, LL Cool J, New York Dolls, Rage Against the Machine, Todd Rundgren, Tina Turner, and Dionne Warwick. That's the list.
And is there do they pick a certain number out of the list to get in? Or how does it move from
nominated? I don't think there's a set number. I think it's just whoever gets the requisite number of votes.
Okay.
But yeah, so nobody really all that recent. A lot of holdovers from the old days.
Yep.
I guess Jay-Z would probably be a new competitor. LL Cool J would be, no, his first album was like 87, so he's probably been on the list for a while. It's 25 years, so the cutoff would have been 96. First album would have been in 96 to make the list.
It's 25 years from your first album. That's the rule.
Right.
Okay.
The first Foo Fighters was 95, so they would probably be the most recent. Jay-Z's might have been 95 too. I'd have to look that up, but otherwise there are a lot of familiar names. Rage Against the Machine actually probably would have been about the same time too, probably 95.
So every time whenever I see these lists, I think that I have no qualification to say who should or shouldn't get in, because it's just who do I like more. So, like, what other criteria are there?
I'm glad you asked. So, here are the criteria that they use. Factors such as an artist's musical influence on other artists, length and depth of career and the body of work, innovation and superiority in style and technique are all taken into consideration. So, you got three things right there, all of which may carry different weight with different people. And I'm sure they do.
Mm-hmm.
My number one criteria is the middle one, which is length and depth of career and the body of work. So when I put together my list, here's who I had. I had Dionne Warwick, LL Cool J, Foo Fighters, Jay-Z, and Chaka Khan. Those are the ones that I picked that should make it this year. All of which have had long careers, a real rich depth of work, body of work. Some of them are influential on other people. But so that leads me to some of the ones that I left off, which are like Devo, Go-Go's, Rage Against the Machine, New York Dolls. So you have the same problem with a lot of those bands, which are you're basically looking at one or two really good albums. In the case of the Go-Go's, you're looking at like four or five singles that have carried their career through the entirety of their career. And they're helped out this year by this documentary that came out on Apple or something, which I watched and which I liked. But they're really they've just really got a handful of songs that have made them, and they're great songs, but that's about it for them. And Devo is the same way. You got the first like two Devo albums are really good. Rage Against the Machine shouldn't even be allowed to buy a ticket to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that sounds like a stretch to me.
There you're talking about two decent albums and three maybe notable songs between those two albums, three or four songs. So Devo, Go-Go's, Rage Against the Machine. Tina Turner might deserve to get in, but she's already in. She's in with Ike and Tina, so this is really a determination on whether she deserves to get in as a solo artist. I don't know, but...
Do you think it'll be like a political thing because Ike was a jerk, so people will be like, put her in on her own so you could sort of to diss Ike, right?
Yeah, it could be. Do you know who the one woman to be inducted twice is?
Nope.
The answer?
Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks.
Oh, hey, yep. That was pretty good. That's just like off the top of my head.
Yep, she just got in a couple years ago. She was obviously in with Fleetwood Mac, and then she was inducted again as a solo artist a couple years ago.
See, I don't know. I don't know about that. Solo artist Stevie Nicks. I mean,
she had a lot of big hits as a solo artist. I don't know.
Maybe she had more than I realized.
With that.
Yeah. Well, what about? Go ahead.
Well, the New York Dolls is a tough one because they're obviously so influential. So of the three criteria, influence is one of them. So if you put a lot of credence in influence, New York Dolls is obviously going to be in for you. But, I mean, they've been on the ballot for a lot of years now and haven't made it. So I don't know that they're going to do it. And I should also mention once again that it's a crime that Husker Du, the Smiths, and the Pixies are not in, or nor have they ever even been nominated. So,
how about the Replacements? If you're going to put those others in that category,
yeah. I mean, there's a long list of people that deserve to be in.
So, well, what about Pete Rose? Think he can ever get in?
Into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah, for that Pete Rose rap album that he did back in 1984.
It's a little late for him to start taking up. So the first Pete Rose album would be this year, and he's probably in his 80s. So let's wait 25 years. I mean, I suppose he could get in posthumously.
Yeah, he needs to put out an album really fast so that he'll be remembered.
If these criteria are to be believed, then he just needs one album and to be really influential.
Yeah, but you won't vote for him. It sounds like to you, body of work means you got to have like a long career. Like you're not going to like one big selling album. So I'm thinking of the example of Carole King, who had one of the hugest albums of all time,
right?
The Tapestry album.
Yep.
And maybe you're not old enough, but some of us remember like our parents having that album and it being full of hits.
I remember that.
I think it's kind of like the Fleetwood Mac Rumors album in that respect. That it's just like you hear a song, you're like, oh my God, that's just iconic.
Yeah, Rolling Stone has it in their, top 20 of all time, right? Carole King's Tapestry, I believe it's
probably
in there.
Yeah, so I actually, I was thinking, God, that has to be one of the top selling albums of all time. So I looked it up, and there's a Wikipedia article, so it has to be right? It's called List of Best Selling Albums. So we're going to count them down. We're going to start with number 11 because we have to include that one. That's Led Zeppelin 4 is number 11. Then we have the Grease soundtrack at number 10. Shania Twain, Come On Over, is number 9 here. Fleetwood Mac Rumors, Saturday Night Fever, which I thought was number 1, so I was way off. Eagles Greatest Hits.
Sure.
The Bodyguard soundtrack with Whitney Houston and other people is number 5. Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. Did you know that the Meatloaf Bat Out of Hell album is number 3? That's nuts.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Number 2, this surprises me too, Back in Black by AC/DC.
And Garrett and I were just discussing that album. It's on his top 500 list that he's cruising through. It's like near number 200.
I can't imagine Barrett would like that album, but who knows what he was up to in 1980. I mean, who knows? And of course, number 1 is Thriller, Michael Jackson. That's not surprising.
I was a little surprised by Shania Twain, but there was that kind of period in the mid-90s where like kind of pop country was just incredible, like the sales, like Garth Brooks.
Right.
where they were just playing. I mean, they'd play like Lambeau Field and sell out. I mean, it was just absolutely obscene. People were just throwing money at these people.
So you combine the popularity of the genre plus her model good looks. You know, she's on, you know, like all kinds of teenagers' posters and stuff. So
yeah,
yep. So I don't know what this means. You'd have to delve more deeply into this Wikipedia article, but they have two lists of the sales, the total sales of the album. One is says total certified copies from available markets. They seem to be saying that's like more reliable. And then there's one called claimed sales. So, like for example, the Thriller album has total certified copies of 47.3 million and claimed sales of 66 million.
Mm.
Anyway, it's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, so you have to factor in popularity. So,
you know, I think I would put Carole King in there because if you've got an album that's that huge, you know, you just got to put them in there. That's what I would do. Even though I understand your argument about like having a longer career. She must have had other albums, but that's the one that everybody remembers, you know.
Yeah. I think she had like that one and then the one after it was really well reviewed, and then she took a couple years off, and then there was one later in the 70s that was pretty well reviewed. But it really doesn't go past like maybe three albums that people think are like truly great. And then there are the genres where I don't really follow all that closely, like hip hop. And so I know LL Cool J's body of work pretty well. And, you know, he in 1987, he came out with the, I forget whether Radio was first or it was like 85 maybe. So he's been around a while, but he was one of the first. So I think both in terms of length of career and, you know, influence on other people, I think he's up there in both those categories. So I think he deserves it. And then Jay-Z's had, I mean, he's probably had five or six like really good albums. So I don't know if maybe he shouldn't be like first ballot. Maybe let Jay-Z wait a little bit.
Yeah. But
I think he's going to get in for sure.
And then Iron Maiden, right? Like, I don't really know how to judge them either. I think they're kind of fun, but I couldn't tell you more than like three of their songs. So,
but right, that's another one though. If you know anybody who likes metal, you know they worship at the altar of Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
So you kind of almost have to take their word for it. Like,
right.
I mean, if they're willing to spend their time listening to it. And yeah, you're right. I don't know Iron Maiden all that well at all. So,
but to the extent that I've followed the metal genre, we should have Nicholas on for this. But I think if Judas Priest is not in, then Iron Maiden shouldn't be. Because come on, Judas Priest, the greatest.
You link them together. See, I kind of link AC/DC, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, kind of those bands together. Like they're almost kind of the same band.
AC/DC is different because they're not as fast and they're not as, you know, wild metal. They're more, I don't know, AC/DC.
Cheap Trick I kind of put in that category, although they're a little bit more like 70s rock.
Yeah, a little more pop, a little more 70s rock, a little less metal. Yeah. Hmm. Well,
Of course, there's the most controversial band of the group, which is the Foo Fighters, which we've been fighting about.
We've been debating Foo Fighters this weekend. Well, I was really, my comments were mainly the new album that I just sampled a little bit, and I thought, yeah, you know what? It just, I don't think I get it, you know?
Yeah, the new album is not great, but as a Foo Fighters fan since 95, I actually went and saw them in concert, their very first tour. You know, I've been a big fan of theirs, and they can say none of their albums are truly great, but they're always, you know, 4 stars out of 5. They just keep banging out really good albums, and they've done it for 27 years. So, and the fact that they've been so consistent for so long, and in an era where rock music basically doesn't even exist as a popular art form anymore. So I just give Dave Grohl and the band a lot of credit for just kind of keeping rock music alive in this thin area until, you know, some younger band blows up and everybody realizes how much fun it is again. So they're just kind of a bridge between eras.
Yeah,
so
they
give them credit for that.
They haven't had their Greta Van Fleet yet, right? They, you know, the next band that sounds exactly like them. But you have to credit Dave Grohl, because I think he's pretty sincerely into the rock and roll, you know? So that's, I do think he's a cool guy.
And he goes in and helps out other bands and does all that kind of other stuff. One of the funniest moments for me of the pandemic, of the lockdown, I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast, and he was interviewing Pearl Jam. Hmm. And he's like, Bill Simmons, the host, is asking Pearl Jam, "So what do you think is the next big band to come up? When's rock going to start up again?" And he said, "I mean, there's some young bands, up and comers like Greta Van Fleet." And the guys in Pearl Jam are just dead quiet. Like, they don't want to say anything, like, because they know how bad Greta Van Fleet is. And so they finally get around to answering the question, and they actually mention Fontaine's DC as a band that they really like and that could bring things back. So I was very happy about that.
That's good.
So, well, even the big boys listen to South by Southwest bands.
Yeah.
With David Frick.
Yes.
Who was there at the show with us.
Are you in for South by Southwest 22?
I'm in forever, whenever they decide to have
me too. I'll sign up the moment they say it's happening.
I mean, if they have the money to do it.
Yeah.
They probably just bled the whole thing dry now. I talked to somebody who has been in Austin recently, and they just said it's a ghost town. Like, there's just nothing going on.
Yeah, well, when you have a place that's known for live music and you can't have live music, that puts a big damper on things.
Yeah, so, and that's been the case for over a year now.
Yeah.
Almost a year.
It's a bummer, yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, let's see. That's the preliminaries. We haven't even started the podcast yet, basically, right?
Yeah. What are we, 2 hours in?
Something like that, yeah. Approximately.
Good.
Well, this is a curated by Chris podcast, because I was searching for things to talk about. And I'm like, last week you told us you really liked this Pom Poko album. And then I'm like, okay, take it away, Chris. And you've provided us with content. So that's great. I think we should start with Pom Poko.
All right. Pom Poko is a Norwegian band. I don't know if they're from Oslo.
They are. Bandcamp says Oslo.
Okay. I knew absolutely nothing about them before I read a review in Pitchfork of their album, so I decided to try out, and I immediately loved it. It's kind of within my Girls with Guitars theme, although the lead singer, I'm going to butcher this, Ragnhild, R-A-G-N-H-I-L-D, Ragnhild Fangel. I don't believe none of the videos I've seen show her playing guitar. So she's not a girl with a guitar, but the other male members of the band play guitars, obviously. But they're kind of like an art rock band, right? I mean, I wouldn't say they're math rock. Like, who's our favorite math rock band? Barrett and I went to go see him at the, with Jordy, what's his name?
Oh, Black Midi?
Black Midi. I mean, they're not math rock like Black Midi, but they're arty rock. They have, you know, they'll jump around, and it's kind of angular, but then there's like a heavy metal crunch in there, and it's catchy, and then they slow down, and it's kind of off kilter, and I just really liked it from the beginning. So the album is called Cheater, and let's see. I should pick a song, shouldn't I?
Yep.
Okay. Here's the hard part, because there are so many good songs on here. Let me see. Oh, I love this song. You're all gonna be glad that I didn't pick it right away because of the tension. Number 6, Andy, go to school.
Ice cream or cold milk?
Yep. Definitely a fun one.
Yeah, if I were you, I would not expect me to like this. But I do.
I hadn't thought about it. I'd barely sampled it until you mentioned it, and then I dove into it, listened a few times. And I definitely think it's fun. I think I'm so starved for live music that I tend to listen to things and think, oh, that'd be a fun live band. Right? They sound like they'd be a fun live band.
Yeah, the videos that I've seen of them, they do look like they'd be a lot of fun. And I think some of those videos are actually, I don't know what the lockdown situation is in Norway, but they seem to be fairly recent. Not like New Zealand where everybody can just like rock out at shows
right
when they want, go to Beth shows. But that is also the second song on the album that refers to the name Andy or Andrew. The number three song on the album is called Andrew, and that one's called Andy Go to School. So I don't know who this Andy is or why who this Andrew is or why must he keeps getting mentioned.
Must be a friend of the band or something. So the I think one other band reference that's kind of sort of obvious is, you know, you take a singer with a high-pitched voice and some kind of off-kilter rhythms and things, and it's going to get compared to Deerhoof, right?
Yeah.
But this is a little more poppy and more maybe accessible. It seems like every time I listen to a Deerhoof album, there are like two or three songs that I think are really good, but the whole album is like hard to get through. So anyway, yeah. Well, you know, it just so happens that that my pick was number three, Andrew.
I ruined it.
Let's play it. Pretty fun, right?
Yeah, I like this album from the second I listened to it, first listened to it. That doesn't usually happen. Usually takes me a few listens, but I'm like, yeah, this is really good.
Yeah, cool.
And I said it out loud. Yeah, this is really good. to no one.
Right. To yourself in your Ron Swanson studios.
If you go through their videos, like as I was – my process is I usually listen to an album, listen to it again, and then I go and I watch videos to just kind of see what the band looks like and kind of what their whole aesthetic is. And they have a video on there that's not—it's not from their first album and it's not from this album. I don't know if it was a single in between albums or something, but it's called Leg Day, which is absolutely amazing. And the video is really great too. So definitely check that out. If that song was on this album, I mean, we'd be talking early declarations of. You know, top five albums.
But, wow.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Here we are in February.
All right. Well, how about another pick?
Okay, let me go with the number two song on the album, Like a Lady.
Doesn't that sound like a like an early '90s alt rock song with a with the thrash guitars?
Yeah, it could be a Breeders song, or it could be like a Julianna Hatfield song. Maybe that's the appeal to me subconsciously.
Yeah, so I'm thinking Anurag should like that. So you can let us know.
It should be noted that Pom Poko is a Studio Ghibli Japanese cartoon about. Pot-bellied raccoon dogs who shape-shift with their testicles. So that is where the band got their name. And, kind of weird. So, But there you go. Important details.
Worthy pick for sure.
Yep.
All right. What's next in the Chris arsenal for the week?
All right. Well, this is another podcast favorite, even though they've only had... It's probably the third time we've had them on the podcast, even though they only have one proper album. This is Beach Bunny, Chicago favorites. And I guess they recorded another EP during lockdown. And that EP actually got them on the Jimmy Kimmel Live national TV show. So good for them. They were just on a couple of weeks ago. And I was very happy to see that. As we've discussed before, they're the last band that I saw live before lockdown. And their album, I think, last year, what was it? I have it at like number two or something.
It was way up there.
Yeah. Yep. Really liked it. So, yeah, they make, catchy guitar-driven pop music. And this EP is absolutely no different. So there's only four songs on it. So if we each pick one, then we've got 75% of it covered. But
that'd be 50%. Two out of four would be 50%, just to clarify the math.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I haven't had that much Johnny Walker Black yet. I know this is frowned upon on the podcast, but I'm going to do it because this is a four-song EP. Let's just go with the first song on there, which is the catchiest. It's Good Girls, parentheses, Don't Get Used, end parentheses.
Say you miss me, say you want to kiss me. I liked it better when you improvised a story we had. If you adore me, why do you ignore me? I liked it better when you said me sorry when I was sad. Stop singing. You're acting like you're deadbeat dead, and no, you know you're better than that, but you can't risk.
Now, you may ask yourself, do I, as a man in his 40s, feel weird about liking a band who writes songs about being a young woman and your ins and outs with silly boys and relationships and things like that? Do I feel weird about that? The answer is yes, I do. But it's great. The lead singer and songwriter, of course, is Lily Trofilio, who is, I think she's like 22 or 23. And I just want Lily to find love. And yeah. I like hearing about what's going on in her life. She doesn't hold back in these songs. These are clearly what's happening in her everyday life.
We definitely want good things to happen to her.
Yes.
Yeah, I listened to this once when it came out, and I thought, yeah, that's pretty good. And didn't really delve into it any further. And then you assigned it to me, so I listened to it again. And I liked it a little bit more. And then I was doing pre-production, like just a few minutes before we started recording, and I realized the title track, number 4, is great. So that's my pick, Blame Game.
Time keeps slipping away, slipping away. Same routine settles in last Friday. TV.
So I looked up the lyrics, and they're great. So I'm not a good lyric analyst, but check it out.
Yeah, this is one of those cases where a band is so good at kind of like discussing what's really going on and what's, you know, happening in their lives. If like they get really happy, are they going to be bad songwriters all of a sudden?
Right.
Like Bethany Cosentino of Best Coast, like, I kind of don't want her to get her shit together because I really like her life being a mess and her writing songs about it.
Yeah.
But no, yeah. Seriously, Bethany, I hope you're very happy and things are going well.
Yep.
So I'll pick another song. That's 3 songs out of the 4. That doesn't mean the song that we didn't pick is terrible. Just, I like this one better.
Live it up.
And, this is song number 3, Nice Guys.
You're so pretend, shies. Pretending like you hate me when the world don't go your way. So tell you guy friends. She was super clingy, so you got. Yeah.
There you go.
Three quarters of the Beach Bunny four song EP. Yeah, and the one we didn't play is good too. So
yep. Solid.
Yep. So
even on a LP, you're not going to get four solid songs like that.
Puts the pressure on themselves for the next album, right?
So yeah, they did Prom Queen, which was an EP, and then they did their full length, and then they did this, which is an EP. So I suppose if you cram them all together, they have enough for two LPs. So we'll give them credit for that.
Yep. And if they've been, they were already TikTok sensations, and they got on, which late night show was it? Jimmy Kimmel?
It was Jimmy Kimmel, yes.
Yeah, so you get on there, and it's a, future's good, right? Should be?
Yeah, if they could ever get out and tour, which we need them to do.
Maybe they could be your last show before the pandemic and your first one after. You know, they'll come in September or something.
They'll be 2 years older as a band.
Yeah, they won't even look the same anymore.
Yeah, I was driving around bummed out today just at the fact that I never got to see Hazel English last year. God, I would have loved to have seen her on her tour. Now she's already writing another album. So
yeah,
a lot of these people are.
The year that wasn't.
That's right.
Hopefully only a year.
Just imagine all the bands that we're going to be able to get to see. Like, everybody's going to be touring at once now, right?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? All right, sorry if we missed anything, but I hit the space bar and stopped recording. So if there's a strange omission or something, that's why. But we're back. I think we were talking about wanting to see live music and hoping there'd be a big boom once live shows can return.
Yes.
And I was going to ask you, did you see that they announced a socially distanced series or whatever you call it at Bree Stevens Field?
I had not seen that. Who's playing?
Well, here's the thing.
Probably not Ryan Adams again.
So they said they're going to have this summer, and the first one's going to be, I think, May 6th, and they're going to have, I can't remember if it's like, they're going to be three or four or something. And Bree Stevens Field is a small soccer field in on the Near East Side of Madison. I think their capacity is maybe like 8,000 if you fill the place. So they're going to like cut it down to like 2,000 or whatever and have like little spots on the grass where you can stand. You know, if you buy this certain circle, you can stand in there.
Sort of
whatever.
Like VIP section for podcasters.
Yeah,
right?
Well, they should have that. Yeah, right. Absolutely. In the front. So I was joking with Barrett. Maybe this is our chance to see 38 Special again. And then I said, now it's probably going to be Wilco, because Wilco always comes there, or the Avett brothers are always coming there, you know. So they announced it. It's this band that I never heard of called Mount Joy from California, who is classified as indie rock. And it's like, where do they come up with these bands that we've never heard of?
Not only that, the tickets for that place are at a premium. Like, they charge you. The venue fee must be exorbitant because,
yeah,
I mean, what was it to see Wilco? Like $70?
Yeah, like, I think
Cake was playing there and it was like $50 or something.
Yeah,
like something
yeah.
Crazy.
So it might be a lot. So I don't know. And I sampled a little bit. Now, you know, a band that's called indie rock that you've never heard of, what are they going to sound like? Well, you know, they're going to kind of sound like Mumford and Sons or something, right? There's going to be some kind of sing-along thing or something that makes them popular, and it's like, okay, so my cynical music curmudgeon thing came up, and so I don't know. Yeah, maybe there'll be a good one in there.
I thought the end of that story was going to be you listen to Mount Joy and loved it.
Yeah, it didn't happen. Kurt Vile played there a couple years ago, so maybe he'd come. Yeah, who knows? Okay, back to...
Could be a Dolphins in Disguise reunion tour.
Dolphins in Disguise. Yeah. Could be.
That was Will's band from, what, the mid-80s?
Yeah.
Was that 90s?
That was my band from the mid-80s. Like, I think it was a cassette from 1985. Find that at the record store near you.
Well, I've got something from 1994 to talk to you about.
You do. And that means we have to play the jingle.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
It's got to be in here somewhere.
I can't believe I still got this. Wow, when this came out, I was still in diapers, and David was already getting laid.
So not only did you have to go, you know, back to 1994, which isn't really that far back in the vault, but you had to dig underneath a whole bunch of things to find this one.
Right? I did.
It wasn't right at the top of the pile.
No, this is one that's going to be a little more obscure, I think. Although the artist itself is not obscure.
Right.
The album is going to be. So back in the year of our Lord, 1994, you know, grunge was on its way out. People were trying to figure out what the new thing was going to be. Rock music was still around. Weezer was about to put out their first album. Green Day, you know, bands like that. But out of nowhere, out of Southern California, comes this 22-year-old kid, Beck Hansen, with this weirdo song, "Loser," from his album "Mellow Gold."
Yeah,
which you listen to it, and you know it blew up on MTV, and everybody thought, well, this is a one-hit wonder, you know, type of thing, kind of a jokey song. But you know, you go listen to "Mellow Gold," that album, and it's this weird amalgamation of folk music. It's got some folky songs on it, like "Nightmare Hippie Girl" and "Pay No Mind," and you know, songs like that. But then it's also infused with kind of this electronica and soul and rap type of stuff. And it's just, it's all over the board. And it's, you know, one of my favorite albums, and it's really creative. But so the success of that song and then that album led him to be able to release some stuff that he had recorded earlier. And one of those albums, he actually had three albums come out in 1994 because of his backlog that he had that he was then able to release. One of the albums is called Stereopathic Soul Manure, which has some really good kind of folky songs on it, but is a lot more kind of experimental. It's got some instrumentals on it. There's a great song at the end called Satan Gave Me a Taco. But then there's this album, which is kind of his, it's a folk album. It's kind of bluesy, but just basically most of the album is just him with his guitar. And he recorded it for K Records up in Olympia, Washington. And it just has this homemade feel to it where it's just a guy and an acoustic guitar and he's tapping his foot. You can hear that. You can almost hear the floors creak and the chair that he's sitting him in kind of, you know, you can hear the wood on the floor. And it's just got that kind of do-it-yourself, homemade feel. And the songs are just great. So let me start off with the first song on the album, which is called He's a Mighty Good Leader, which is actually – it's a reworking of a – there's a Delta Blues guitarist named Skip James who had a song called Jesus is a Mighty Good Leader, but Beck kind of redid it in his own way. So it's kind of the same song, but it's his own way. So let's just play a little bit of that.
All the way, Lord.
So yeah, if you know anything about the album Mellow Gold or what he would go on to do with Odelay, which came out in 1996 and which Rolling Stone, I think, had as a number 9 album of the entire 1990s, it's completely different. But, you know, it showed that he has the chops to be able to just sit there with a guitar and play folk music and, you know, play a good melody and be sort of bluesy. So, you know, when you're just naked there with you and a guitar to do something that impressive, I think is, you know, almost the most difficult thing to do in music.
Yeah, it's fun to hear the origins of an artist and it seems like once an artist gets access to a fancy studio, it's hard to go back and do any kind of lo-fi thing, right? So it's always going to sound different to hear a recording like that. And I have
right,
to
it's almost, oh, go ahead.
As I'm listening to this, I'm thinking he does know, and it's on purpose that his guitar is out of tune, right? I mean,
yeah.
He just wants it to have that sound that's kind of sort of reckless, right?
But that's all throughout this album. Like the singing is off tune in a lot of cases. The guitar is off tune.
Yeah,
you can catch where he makes mistakes where he's playing, but he leaves them in. And it's, you know, people at the time kind of referred to it as just kind of like slacker folk. Like this is just kind of a slacker ethos, you know, where, you know, Pavement was big at the time and they were slacker rock. And, yeah. You know, they just thought that this was all just kind of the generation. But, you know, to me, those imperfections just make it all the more real and just more human. And just, you know, I connected with it so much more. This is actually the same year that the Palace Brothers album came out, and you know, he'd go on to become, you know, Will Oldham would then go on to become Bonnie Prince Billy, one of my favorite artists.
Mm-hmm.
And that album is the same way. I mean, it's, you know, stripped down, just him and a guitar, and, you know, my love of like Nick Drake type of, you know, Nick Drake obviously had some instrumentation on some of his albums, but, you know, the Pink Moon style. Where it's just you and a guitar. That's a lot of what's going on here. And he on the album, he's got a couple guests. He's got one of the guys from the Presidents of the United States of America.
That's funny. Yeah,
I read band that too. That they had one catchy album.
They won't make the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That the length of the career just isn't there.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they were pretty influential on other president related bands.
Yeah.
A couple guys from Built to Spill actually dropped in and played some instruments. For the most part, it's him and his guitar. There are a couple songs where they experiment with like an electronic slide guitar and you know, there's some slight drumming going on. But my favorite ones are the ones where it's just kind of him playing folk. And let's go with the next song, which is Hollow Log, which I think is kind of in that vein.
Go where you want to, do the things you feel. Walk around with a broken leg and $100 bill. Get yourself a pistol, get yourself a dog. Stay up all night getting drunk, sleeping on a hollow log. Restless, sleep till you're tired. Wake up without thinking, you're the one that I desired.
it's back from 1 foot in the grave. What I've got here on the streaming service is the bonus track version that has 32 tracks. But the original is just 16, I think, a mere 16.
Yeah, and when I started researching for this, I realized that there was this bonus version, and I don't know any of like the whole second half of the album just because I had the CD, which ends at the 16 songs. And so I've been doing this thing, I call it zero star reviews, where I go and I look at old like music, movie, and book reviews and find like really terrible reviews that didn't age well.
Yeah.
And it's just funny to see what people thought at the time. And this one was actually really well reviewed. I can't find a single bad review for this album when it came out. In fact, there's a guy that was writing for the Nevada newspaper who just panned Mellow Gold. But then he heard this album and he's like, well, maybe this guy is actually talented. So then he went back and he listened to Mellow Gold and he wrote a column about how I revised my Mellow Gold review because now I realize this guy's actually got some talent. So. There's some albums that just don't have bad reviews, like Nirvana's Nevermind. You cannot find a bad review of it anywhere.
I think if I went back and I haven't spent a whole lot of time listening to Mellow Gold or Odelay, I feel like if I did, I'd really like them because he's a super talented guy.
Yeah.
So
out of time.
We should play one more, right?
Yeah, this is... this is near the end of the album. It's called Painted Eyelids, and it's a song where, you know, I grew to not be very much of a lyrics guy, but the lyrics on this album are great too. They're just kind of stream of consciousness. They don't really make any sense, but they're funny and they kind of paint a picture. So I really like this song for its lyrics, but it's Painted Eyelids.
Got a little bit of that harmonica in there.
Yeah, the musicianship isn't gonna dazzle anybody, but I think that's even harder to do, to be that simple and yet write such good songs. I wake up and look upon your painted eyelids. The world is your oyster and the trash bags are your kids. The ceiling is invisible. There's a bird sinking through the sky, and every hour that passes is teaching me how to cry. I love those lyrics.
Yeah. Do you ever, you know, you're a writer, you could probably write lyrics. But when I read lyrics, I'm like, there is no way that I could do that. There's just no way. So
you're in a band. You should be able to do that. You've written lyrics at some point, right?
No, when I had my first band, when I was 18, we had the guy who wrote all the lyrics. He was pretty smart, pretty witty. He ended up going to Harvard Law School, so that was to prove his intellect. Yeah. I tried writing some lyrics, and they were just like goofball, like bad versions of Rick Ocasek lyrics or something. They just were not. No, it just didn't work out.
It was a rap.
I did write a sappy song for my wife one time, but it was very sappy.
We should play some of your music on the podcast at some point if we haven't.
We played the heavy metal, remember? Like several years ago.
I should note that this album has a song called Asshole on it, which was covered eventually by Tom Petty.
Yep. So yeah, I read that too. Yeah.
He was a fan of this album as well, so put myself in good company.
Yep, that's anyway, it's a good
back,
pick.
One Foot in the Grave.
Yep.
Go check it out. For some reason on iTunes, it's in the compilations section of Beck's oeuvre.
Why would they call it a compilation? I mean, it's him. There's no other artist listed.
Right. It's not like a greatest hits or anything. It's just something he had sitting on the shelf that he couldn't put out until he had a hit.
So
loser let him do that.
If this is a compilation, then all albums are compilations because they're just compiling a group of songs together.
I think that's a fair statement.
All right. We're greater than $0, right?
Yeah. You promised me 30 seconds of the greatest album of all time or something.
Yeah, the greatest moment in rock history. That's what I said. All right, I'll play it. So I built this up so nobody will agree with me.
I know. But, I've been waiting for this.
But I was listening to this recently, and I thought, God, that is unbelievable. Like, what a moment. Like, have you ever had, you must have, and I don't know if they come to your mind right now, but there are albums and then songs that you hear, and then, like, even, like, a moment within a song where it just, like, you're just like, wow, that is unbelievable, right?
Well, for people these days, it's like the Phil Collins drum solo, and I Can Feel It Coming in the Air Tonight.
Right.
Where you have all these videos of like young kids listening to it for the first time and it just blows their mind. They're like, oh my God, I cannot believe somebody played the drums like that.
So, I don't really expect anybody to agree with me that like this is the greatest moment in rock history, but I was playing it recently and then I had to play it for my son. My son has never been on the podcast, but he's also got good musical taste. I said, you have to hear this. This is like, just listen to how great this is. So here, I'm gonna cue it up here. It'll be about 30 seconds. We'll see if anybody agrees with me. Somebody on this, in the aging rocker demographic that we're at here, somebody's going to at least agree with me that this is really great. So hold on. Okay, when that bomb hits, that synth bomb, that's just unbelievable.
So this is what you had me wait for?
You're just completely silent. He's like, wait a minute, I thought it'd be something good. Yeah, that's it.
All right, so here's my statement on that.
Okay.
I agree with you 100%. I was playing possum. You were completely right. I love that part of that song.
That's Blue Monday by New Order. There was a podcast about the history of Joy Division and New Order called Transmissions, I think. And you can find it on, any podcast directory. And I think there are 6 episodes, and they're going to do another series like next year or something. But the last episode, the whole episode is dedicated to the song Blue Monday. And that's what got me thinking about it. And, they were playing around with drum machines. And, one thing I love about it is that they were, they didn't care if they were programming something that a human couldn't play. So it's not like they're like trying to imitate a real drummer. They're just like, we've got this cool machine and we're going to make cool sounds. So there's like these, that fast bass drum and the stuff that like doesn't sound like a real drummer, but doesn't sound like anything else at the time, and it's just great. So, yeah. Whenever I hear that synth bomb sound, I'm like, that is just unbelievable. So there you go.
I was watching a lot of those like great albums series on Amazon, where they have this like whole series of like great albums. They go through a bunch of them, and Who's Next is one of them. And they've got Pete Townsend talking about kind of like the synthy parts of Who's Next, where like, you know, in Teenage Wasteland and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, I'm just playing around with the tape and like rewinding it and seeing kind of how we can make the sound. And if we can't play it live, we can't play it live. We'll just play it off a tape or whatever. And so they just went for it in the studio and then figured it out after the fact. So that's probably what New Order did, be my guess.
Yeah.
I know these guys, our, I guess, sister podcast, Political Beats, that I've been on a couple times. They're the ones I was on when I did the Ramones with them. And they just did a an episode on worst cover songs of all time, and they were putting out feelers for, like, you know, on Twitter, what are the worst cover songs of all time. I threw out Limp Bizkit's version of George Michael's Faith, which is just absolutely, it's so bad. Uh-huh. I think I was sterile after I listened to it for the first time. But I also thought of this, like 10 years ago, this band called Orgy did a version of Blue Monday.
Right, yeah.
And it's there are different categories of bad covers.
Yeah.
And one of those categories is like, what's the point?
Right.
Like if you're going to make a song that's almost exactly like the original, you know, down to the very note, what is the point of doing that other than to try to have a hit, try to have a song in your catalog that people have heard of?
Right.
And they do absolutely nothing really with it other than add a few guitars. So that was my, I just think they desecrated one of the greatest songs of all time.
Yeah.
So go listen to Orgy's version of Blue Monday and demonstrate your scorn for it as I have done. So
yeah,
but I agree with you. That's a great song and a great part of it.
Good. So you weren't as disappointed as it appeared at first. So
I was just messing with you.
There are probably some listeners out there who are extremely disappointed, but I'll put a teaser on the, when I name the podcast, I'll say something about the greatest moment in rock and roll history, so everybody can be disappointed.
Yeah. And we threw it in at the end, so they have to listen to the whole way.
Right. Yep. Yep. All right. Well, this has been great. Thanks, Chris. We rambled on. I don't know what the total time is right now because we had that glitch where we stopped recording and started over again. But it's pretty good. It's way, way greater than $0 in my mind.
Hour and a half. Just about.
Okay. Yeah, it should be about that. So, come on again soon. Okay. Are you listening to more 2021 releases?
I am. I've listened to the new Weezer.
Okay.
Which probably doesn't merit mention, although I guess I just did.
Yeah.
The new Foo Fighters, which isn't great. So I'm kind of getting the big 90s bands out of the way. But I was actually going to suggest Goat Girl until the podcast came out. You guys already talked about it.
We beat you to it. Yeah,
you beat me to it. So
good.
I'll keep digging for stuff.
All right, great. Let's sign off then. We'll talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.